Good evening and welcome to Beyond Belief here on Clare FM on this Sunday evening. You're warmly welcome as you join us for our Sunday evening edition of Beyond Belief this Sunday, the 18th of July, here on Clare FM. In our programme this evening, we're going to have a special tribute to the late Sister Bosco from Talla, who passed away last week. Father Brendan Quinlivan and Joanne O'Brien bring us a very moving tribute to the late Sister Bosco, who was known and loved for her dedication and care, especially in the whole area of East Clare. We'll hear from Father Peter McVerry on his work for housing and poverty over the past 30 years. And I'll be in conversation with my colleague Stephen Fletcher, reflecting on some events of over the past week. All that to come, but first, of course, some music here on our programme. Here are Socks in the Frying Pan and the Boop Set. That was Socks in the Frying Pan with the Boop Set. You're tuned to Beyond Belief here on Clare FM on this Sunday, the 18th of July.
Hear me out again.
And I'm now joined by our colleague Stephen Fletcher over in England. Stephen, you're very welcome to our programme this evening.
Thank you, Jerry. Always a pleasure to join you.
This time last week, all of us were probably glued to televisions, or at least trying to follow the commentary on the match between Italy and England. Yeah. And went right to the wire.
It did, you know, it's never really very satisfactory, is it, when it ends in penalties. But that's what happened on Sunday. And in fact, it happened while the programme, last week's programme, was going out. The football game was going on. And yes, I always have to qualify this, Jerry, by saying I'm not a big football fan. And a lot of the sort of the emotion that was being stirred up, you know, had undertones which made me uncomfortable. I'm aware from reading my Irish Times last week that a large proportion of the Irish population were supporting Italy on the basis that they were supporting anyone but England. And I can understand that.
Right.
I can understand that. Especially as there's a danger, isn't there, that we come over as arrogant. And I think it's very obvious that in Europe we're not that popular. Just look at the Eurovision. United Kingdom, nul point once again. So we know, I know, where we are in the popularity states in Europe, and I can understand it. So, yeah, it was a disappointing ending as far as England was concerned. But I think what came out of it and what struck me particularly was the racist abuse. It's unfortunate that three penalties that missed were taken by black players. And they were talented black players. You know, in any other circumstance, they'd have probably scored a penalty without a problem. But of course, that unleashed a barrage of racist comments on social media. And it's caused a lot of sort of heart searching. Because I think there was a feeling people were trying to put about that, you know, the football team, the English football team, had brought together, racism was no more, we're one nation and one team, and we're all together in this. And sadly, what subsequently happened following the penalties was that, in fact, racism is there under the surface, and it's there in society. And it's, you know, we can't get away from that. And the problem is, how do we deal with it? And that is the question that we should be asking.
I think that's very true. And I suppose one thing that I have learned myself, I'm very fortunate. I have a very good friend who is African-American living in New York, and we've been friends for 30 years or so. But I have learned from him, and it's only when you listen and you learn from that person's experience of the work environment, living in society, how it has affected them, that you begin to see, well, there often may be hidden racism, and I could be guilty of it as well as any other person. It's a whole learning process. It's not simply just turning on and off a switch of racism. We have to learn, as my friend is continually reminding me, that it is systemic in society, and it's something that we have to learn to cope with and to rectify.
Yes.
And that is a long journey.
Yes, that's right. And the Church of England has been accused of institutional racism. And they're looking at that now, and they realise that they have. And there have been some well-documented cases where black ministers have gone for a particular parish, and the diocese has even come back to them and said, oh, well, I think you'd be more suited in ministering to your own community, you know, and things like that. It may have been what was happening sort of 30, 40, 50 years ago, but it's not acceptable now, Jerry, is it?
No, and I suppose it's the whole thing of society and how we're learning to adapt and to live with the new global world. You know, I think this generation, all of us, we're more conscious of things happening in different parts of the world and affected by them in some way, more so maybe than our forefathers were. And the immediacy of news nowadays, you know, brings us right up to date with what's happening in many parts of the world.
Yeah.
But there's also, I think, you know, the danger in the time we're living in in that things are becoming a little bit more polarised, and that in itself brings division. People's opinions can become very hardened and polarised. Well, this is the way I think, and everybody else should be thinking that way as well. You know, that's beginning to creep in and happen a lot in life. And, you know, unfortunately, the virtue of tolerance and acceptance goes down the scale.
Yeah, I think that perhaps COVID, it's increased our xenophobia, hasn't it? Our fear of foreigners. It started off that we were calling what we now call the Delta variant was called the Indian variant. And before that, it was the UK variant. And so it was, you know, we were sort of identifying people as being the cause of this. And so as a result of this, I think there's a growing fear of foreigners and wanting to sort of retreat into ourselves and protect ourselves. And that's understandable, but we have to be aware of it and have to look at it.
And I suppose it not just is happening in terms of football support or anything like that. It's also, I think, echoing a little bit into the realms of government, because I noticed in the past week over there in the UK, Stephen, that the Conservative government have brought in a measure that is going to reduce the amount of state money that they are going to contribute into the global pot for developing countries.
Yeah.
And, you know, at a time, the reason for it being that because of all their spending on protecting people during the COVID pandemic means that they have to in some way cut the budget a little bit. But the danger is that the most vulnerable in our world are the people that are going to suffer.
Yeah, the government did face a revolt amongst its own backbenchers over this, but they couldn't mobilise enough opposition to actually defeat the measure, and so it did go through, and they are reducing the 0.7% of our GNP, or our gross national income. They're reducing from 0.7 to 0.5, so it's still better than many countries, but it is a reduction, and Boris says it's because obviously we have to rebuild our finances because it's cost us so much. So that's something which is continuing to cause debate in this country, and the pressure is still on that it should be increased back to what it was, which is the UN Millennium Development Goal that all countries should be aiming for, which is 0.7. And to be fair, the UK was doing that, but they've reduced it to 0.5 now. So it's one of those situations that it's caused a great debate anyway as to whether we should have done it or not, but we have.
One of the heartening things that was here last year during the first pandemic shutdown, we were heartened, I think, at church circles that even though our own parish contributions had reduced enormously during that time, that nevertheless people continued to contribute to the Lenten campaign for Trochra, which is the church's agency to assist people in the developing world here. That seemed to have remained fairly steady, that people still contributed and made their Lenten sacrifice very viable to assist those in need. And I think the results, while they're not fully in for this year's Lenten campaign, I think the collection at parish level has maintained itself. And our generosity and support for the developing world has continued.
Yes. And it's something I remember from a few years ago, seeing a survey that showed that Irish people were amongst the most generous in the world in giving to charity. So as individuals, the Irish people are very generous. Regardless of what the government gives as the state giving money, Irish people are very generous in giving to charity. And that is something to your credit, I think.
Well, Stephen, it's great to chat to you again this week. And hopefully next week we'll be able to continue our conversation. And to wish you well over there, and as you journey through this difficult period and cope with all of the Freedom Day and everything else that's going to happen for the opening up of society there, just as we're trying to cope with the measures of opening up our society here as well. Quite a challenge ahead for all
there
of us.
There is. And you know, just finally, Jerry, the good news is we've actually booked to return to Ireland. We're driving to Ireland on the 2nd and 3rd of August. So I might even see you in a couple of weeks' time for that coffee.
Well, that will definitely be a pleasure. Look forward to that, Stephen. And thank you for taking the time with us here this evening. And I suppose coming out of what we've been chatting about, a piece of music I've chosen is simply Dionne Warwick singing What the World Needs Now Is Love, Sweet Love.
Very good.
There's just too little love, but what the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another mountain. There are mountains and hillsides enough to climb. There oceans and rivers enough to cross, enough to last till the end of time. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little love. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another meadow. There are cornfields and wheat fields enough to grow. There are sunbeams and moonbeams enough to shine. Oh, listen, Lord, if you want to know.
Well, that was Dionne Warwick there with What the World Needs Now Is Love, Sweet Love, and how true that is. And as Jerry and I were just talking about supporting the poorer nations, you know, how true that is. You're tuned to Beyond Belief on Clare FM on this Sunday evening. As I was saying to Jerry just before that last record, I'm here in UK and I have been in the UK ever since August. And the reason is, of course, because of the pandemic. And hasn't it affected how we all carry on our business? We've had to change things here on Beyond Belief. Instead of being in the studio, we have to put these programmes together remotely. And so my colleagues do the hard work and do the interviews using Zoom and things like that. And then they send all the bits to me. And I then put them all together either in my studio here in Milton Keynes. I have a home studio here and I have also got one in Kilrush. And so because we can't get into the studios, we've been doing it remotely and using the internet. And that's something that we've all had to learn to do in different ways, whether it's Zoom or FaceTime or whatever. We've all had to find new ways of talking to each other. Anyway, I was just looking back through some of the shows that we've done. Do you know, this is number 76. This is number 76 that we put together in this way. And I was looking back at some earlier ones, and I found this that you might be interested in listening to. Was McGraw Who, and I'm delighted to say that we've been joined by the singer, Anne Brady. Anne, good evening.
Good evening, Steve. Thanks for having me.
It's a lovely song, and thank you. So, how did it all start?
Yeah, I've been singing for a number of years now. Actually, when I think back, music has always been one of my biggest passions. From an early age, I can remember singing with Ballet Choir, which is where I come from. And I would always just love when we'd learn a new song at school. I actually can remember one of the first times I ever heard of Dolores Keane was when we were taught Lily Marlene in primary school. My mother and father always were very encouraging as well, and, you know, wanted me to sing. And my father thought that it would be a good idea for me to get some voice coaching at a young age. So at the age of about 10, my father had heard of a man called Jerry Cronin, who comes from Ennis. And he used to do voice training in the traditional Shano style. And I'm sure most people will know that the Shano style is all about storytelling and it's really drawing in on your natural style. So I really loved attending the voice training, and this gave me a lot of encouragement to enter various competitions such as Ciolán Gaeilge, Scorn an Oak, Féilean a Hainse. And my mother and father were very encouraging because both of them come from family that enjoy music. Unfortunately, Gerry Cronin has now passed away, but he will always be somebody who has been a massive influence in my music and someone I'll always think of. So it all really started out with the church singing was in 1995, where most any Clare person will not forget 1995 when the Clare senior hurlers won the All-Ireland. The weather was just amazing. It was just a fantastic year. My uncle, Father Martin Keane, came back from Kenya to celebrate his Silver Jubilee, and I was absolutely honoured when he asked me to sing for the Mass. My relations were home from Australia and Chicago, and it was always one of my favourite memories because we had so many get-togethers in the family home in Crenny, where my father comes from, and the Keane family are very musical, so there would always be a sing-song. So that was just one of the standout memories for me. So then after that, I continued just doing a bit of singing for weddings, and my brother and four sisters asked me to sing for their weddings as well. So I sung at all the family weddings and funerals as well.
When somebody approaches you for a wedding or a funeral, do they ask for advice on what should be sung, or do they tell you what they want sung? How does it work?
Well, it's two-way, really. I mean, the bride and groom will always have ideas, and what I find very useful is to have a meet-up with them and go through some material. And I found that that really works, and then they might look to me then for advice on what I could recommend. So it's a two-way thing, and very much it is for a funeral as well. I mean, very often when the coffin leaves the church, a song that people would like to remember the person by will be sung. So that can be very moving indeed, and I feel very honoured to be even asked to be involved in, you know, helping people with that.
Yeah. Yeah, to have somebody actually singing live is so different, isn't it, rather than just a CD or something playing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You joined with other groups singing as well, did you?
I did, yeah. So I was part of a ballad group for a while, and then I joined in a singers club, which was just a wonderful experience. Hearing the most famous rendition of Spansel Hill sung by the late Robbie McMahon was just unforgettable. And also singing alongside the likes of Padraig McNamara. There was also Tony Considine, who was the former selector of the Clare team. He was guest at in a singers club one evening, and he sang My Lovely Rose of Clare. So getting to hear that was amazing, because most people will know that when the Clare hurlers won the All-Ireland, when they were welcomed back to Ennis, Tony Considine sang My Lovely Rose of Clare in the car park, I think it was Quinsward at the time, in 1995. So those were all wonderful experiences, and there was a lot of really great characters that used to attend Ennis Singers Club as well, and really had the great opportunity for hearing different songs or songs that you wouldn't normally hear of. And I remember one night, actually, there was this guy and he sang a really long song. There must have been about 20 verses in the song. And suddenly he stopped singing and scratched his head and said, "Oh, I don't suppose anyone knows what's next." And someone chiped up, "The next verse, I suppose." So, yeah, it was just some really lovely memories.
Yeah, and it reminds me of being in small pubs and hearing, you know, musicians singing and that sort of thing. And hopefully it won't be too long before we get back to that, please God. But you then went off to London.
Yeah, so I spent quite a long time in London. I moved over there in the year 2000, and I didn't really think that there would be much opportunity to keep on with the music. So I wanted to experience what living in a big city was like. And there was other opportunities to sing. And I did continue to sing for weddings and funerals, and actually found that the Shano style of singing went down very well. And I also had the opportunity to sing at a charity gig and shared the stage with Daniel O'Donnell. So there were definitely other opportunities. However, I didn't ever feel that London was going to be something that would be permanent for me. So in 2017, my husband and two children made the move back, and we now live in Swinford in County Mayo, and that's by the River Moy. So I'm continuing with the singing, and unfortunately my husband lost three brothers within the space of 3 years. So it was an absolute honour for me to sing for their funerals. And for two of my brother-in-laws, The Parting Glass was the song that was chosen as the coffin left the church. And it's a song that will always be very close to my heart, and that's what inspired me to do the recording of that song.
And we will close with that in just a moment. But just before we go, tell us, how can people get in touch with you, Anne?
Well, I have an email address. It's annebradychurchsinger, all lowercase, at gmail.com. And my contact number is 087-171-1448.
Well, thank you very much, Anne. And let's hope for opportunities to sing. Well, to sing everywhere, to sing in church, just in ordinary services, but also in funerals and weddings. And please God, it won't be too long before restrictions are lifted and we can get back to what we used to enjoy. You mentioned The Parting Glass, a beautiful song, and we'll hear it now. Thank you so much for being with us this evening, Anne.
Thank you very much for your time, Steve. I really appreciate it.
On this Sunday night, you're tuned to Clare FM, and this is Beyond Belief. Well, a couple of weeks ago, we got the very sad news of the death of a very good friend of ours on the programme. Sister Bosco Griffin, on Wednesday the 7th of July, made the journey back to the Father's house. Sister Bosco was a Sister of Mercy in the Convent of Mercy in Tulla, and was connected with so many of us here on Beyond Belief. Back in the early days, she was great for helping us out and doing thoughts for the day for us, which were very popular and well liked. Father Gerry Kenny, our colleague, of course, was in Tulla, as I was, and Joanne O'Brien is with me this evening, and we're going to chat a little bit about Sister Bosco, because, Joanne, you probably have a longer and a more distant connection to Sister Bosco than the rest of us, because, of course, you were a pupil of hers as well as a colleague.
That's right. I remember I entered first year in St. Joseph's Secondary School, Tulla, way back in 1988. Don't do the maths. I can't believe how long ago it is now. But I remember meeting this nun with the veil, and she was kind of unusual because the nuns at this stage, you know, had given up the veil, and she had this very strange name. But we got to know her character very quickly and fell in love with this woman. And I have such beautiful memories of her. And it was so fabulous to go to a Mercy secondary school with a Mercy nun there. At the time, we would have had a Mercy sister as principal. The very last principal was Sister Angela Hartigan, and then Sister Bosco would have been there right through my 5 years, and such beautiful memories. And really what stands out is her great care for us all, but especially the poor.
Sister Bosco was born in 1941 and entered the Mercy Order in the early 60s in Nina, and she never forgot her Roscommon roots, but she became very much a feature of the Killaloe Diocese, spending many years teaching in St. Mary's Secondary School in Nina before coming to Tulla in 1981. Now, she had two roles in Tulla. She was both a teacher of science and maths, and she was also a guidance counsellor, and that was a kind of a key role in schools even at that time.
Yeah, well, she was biology. When I was going to school in Tulla, she was the biology teacher for senior psychobiology. That's what I remember her teaching, and she was our career guidance teacher. So I remember doing the tests, you know, with Sister Bosco. I remember the room. I can't remember the number of the room now, but out the old school, which is knocked now, sadly, and a housing estate has been built there, but they have the beautiful new school. But I remember her well, guiding us, you know, into career paths and telling us, choose what you love, pick the subjects that you love. I remember having a dilemma, would I choose commerce or art? Mm-hmm. Big dilemma, which do you love more, she'd say, and go for that one. Yeah.
She had an incredible gift for reading people and for seeing things that even young people didn't always see in themselves.
Yeah, yeah. And it was so nice to hear Bishop Fenton mention during his homily about her that she had the ministry of encouragement. Like, Sister Bosco would always recognise what was good in you and praise you. And for us, Brendan, we knew it, you know, here on Beyond Belief, we could be in the middle of the show and she'd be trying to ring us up. Some nights she did. In the middle of our live shows, she would ring us up to praise us and say, well done, you're great. And if she didn't ring during the show, she would wait till a few minutes after the show and the phone would ring as we'd be locking up in Clare FM. My phone would be going or your phone would be going, and she'd be ringing to say well done and how much she enjoyed the programme and keep going, you're great, you're great. Yeah.
I do think that was to some extent a kind of a reflection of the type of faith that Bosco had, in the sense that there was a simplicity about her faith and an incredibly powerful devotional life that reflected, even though it was simple, it had a very profound impact, not just on herself, but on everybody that knew her.
Well, what really struck me was she believed in it. You know, it was obvious that, you know, and that left a lasting impression. You know, prayers really worked with Sister Bosco. She prayed for thousands of people over the years, and we relied on her prayers. I think I was telling you, Brendan, I have a 19-year-old now, but when she was a little baby of 11 weeks old, she got meningitis. And my first reaction, one of my very first reactions, was contact Sister Bosco and get her to pray, that I knew her prayers would be very powerful. And lo and behold, thank God we have now a healthy young woman, mm-hmm. You know, but I knew that this was the person to ring in those difficult days, as have hundreds, if not thousands of other people, I'm sure, can relate to that story.
I think you'll find an awful lot of testimonies out there to the power of Bosco's prayer and to the power of her intercession. And we always love that beautiful little phrase of hers, I'll say your name to God, I'll say your name to Mary, I'll say your name to Jesus. Yeah. Because it gave you a confidence, first of all, that she would do it. Mm-hmm. But secondly, that for some reason or other, it would be heard, because absolutely, her prayer life was so deep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. You knew she was in a deep relationship with God, a loving God. And I definitely think she's, you know, saved people through her prayer. She's definitely helped countless people through her life, through prayer. And she's been a great example to us and reminded us. She has sent so many people to prayer groups over the years.
One of the things that I always loved about Bosco's prayer was it always had a very tactile dimension. You know, sometimes when we think about prayer, we think of it exclusively in almost like wireless communications. But Bosco brought that sense of groundedness and touch and the physical into prayer. I remember particularly we used to see it in Tulla during the Matt Talbot novena, because there would be all sorts of sacramentals have to be blessed, not just the ashes on Ash Wednesday, but there was blessed salt, there was holy water, there was blessed oil to pray for healing. There were things like miraculous medals. I'd say there isn't a child that did have an exam that didn't have a medal from Bosco.
Yeah.
And that really grounded people's prayer.
Yeah, absolutely. I know from having children myself who are past pupils now at St. Joseph's, they have St. Joseph's medals that they got from Sister Bosco. And you know what? They're still in their lockers. They're still at home in their bedrooms. They're important to them to this day. And she was just so kind. She knew she wanted that physical, as you said, that tactile, people to have a connection with God in the physical world. She was so kind. She gave away everything she owned, including she was gifted a St. John Bosco relic, which she rang me up one day and said, "Joanne, where are you?" one summer. And I said, "I'm in Quinn. Will you come over to me? I have something for you," she said. And I made my way over, delighted to meet her anyway. And she said, I have this St. John Bosco first class relic. And listeners may not know I work in St. John Bosco Community College in Kildare. She said, "This is for you now. You can do what you want with it," she said. But of course, I knew that this was an amazing gift to be given to a school that was called after St. John Bosco. And we absolutely treasure it. And we're so grateful to her for it.
And that, of course, and things like that were a real sign of her surrender, her complete surrender. She had no... There was no sense of wanting to own or to have, except wanting to own and to have a relationship with God and have that reflected with others.
Yeah, and an absolute life of service to others, right to her dying days, absolute life of service.
One of the places where that came from was her childhood. And that home and that family was a place of profound faith. It wasn't just the cradle of her birth, it was the cradle of her faith, a faith that she shared so generously with so many people down through the years, including us and our listeners on Clare FM. And one of the most popular people to do thoughts was Bosco. And we went into the archives to try and see could we find something. And we were successful in finding one of her thoughts. And it's a thought that reminds us how much her home and her faith and what she learned at home meant to her.
I often think back to my own small days, and I was small once. One thing that stays with me is the memory of my father on his knees every morning in front of the fire. He knelt on a sock on the cement floor and leaned against a chair. I used to sit on his big boot and swing over and back. I don't know what he said there, and I don't know what he heard. I don't know what he thought, but I know he prayed. When he finished, he walked out into his farm to look after his cattle and his work. What do you remember from your childhood? What will your children remember when they are my age? I pray that the memory of your example and your life will bless them and their friends with faith and goodness.
That was the voice there of Sister Bosco Griffin, whom we are remembering in a special way on our programme tonight. And that thought, I'm not 100% sure, but I think it actually dates from sometime maybe in the mid to late 90s when her voice was strong. And she talks there about the witness that she received to prayer and to faith. And she was certainly a witness, Joanne, throughout all her life in ministry to faith and what God could do for you.
Absolutely, yeah. We just always knew that Sister Bosco, prayer was just an integral part of her life. And if you had any worries, you were reminded, you know, you could pray to God or go to Sister Bosco and she'd pray for you. And another lovely aspect I remember about her was, you know, her letter writing. You know, she didn't reach out to just the community of St. Joseph's Secondary School and all the catchment area and the families around here. We knew she was writing to people on death row in America. And she would write letters to them and they would write back. Like her reach was worldwide, you know.
I remember one time trying to convince her that she should come to Lourdes with us, and she had an awful dread of flying and travelling abroad. And I've been trying to find out. I'm not aware of her ever having left the country. But having said that, her effect was not just local. It was certainly global. We all remember the car boot sale in Tumgraney and herself and her team. And I'm sure I'm not the only one who got rid of what I believe to be junk from my house by sending it off in Bosco's boot. And it would arrive over at the car boot sale in Tumgraney. She was there every Sunday without fail. And every penny she made went to the missions, to Sister Angela Hartigan and to other missionaries like the Divine Word missionaries that she knew and she supported. And there are untold schools, health clinics, hospitals, churches, centres for communities among the poorest of the poor that are there because of her help. And the stamps, were you collecting stamps for her?
Yeah. And that's another really important aspect of her work was, you know, her promotion of the Apostolic Society. You know, she set up so many apostolic groups, certainly around County Clare, if not right throughout the diocese. You know, she believed in the work of the apostolics, and she would identify most often a lady in a parish, and she would go and ask them, would you set up the apostolics? And there are so many groups that exist today because of Sister Bosco.
And she had also great love for the Pioneer Total Abstinence Association. She was always looking out to see if somebody was wearing the pin, and she would draw attention. And again, that thing that Bishop Finton said at the funeral about the ministry of encouragement, if she saw a Pioneer pin, she would encourage somebody and praise them for wearing it. And that always, you know, that sense of encouragement, it kept an awful lot of us going, even at difficult times in our lives, there's no doubt about it. Because she was also an incredible story of survival and triumph over adversity. Back in 2009, she had a very severe stroke, which would have wiped out so many people. But in fact, some of the years in those 12 years since have actually been the most fruitful and blessed of her ministry.
Yeah, and I suppose we should mention your colleague here in Tala, the other Father Brendan, Father Brendan Lawler, who came to her aid on that day when she got the stroke 12 years ago. Thank God he found her. But it was a very severe stroke. And what I remember Brendan at the time afterwards, thank God she eventually healed. It took time and she was never quite the same, you know. But she got 2,000 mass cards. And they were the people who went to the bother of writing to her. You know, that will give people an idea of the impact she had. And what did Sister Bosco do when she was well enough? Any card that there was a name and address on, she wrote back to them to thank them and probably put in a medal or something lovely into the envelope.
We're echoing some key words here that are fundamental to the life of a Christian. A sense of gratitude, a sense of the presence of God, a mission and a ministry of prayer. And that wonderful word again that we keep coming back to in Bosco's case, that sense of encouragement on the journey. And whether it was the giving the child a medal going into the exam so that they knew that even though they might feel they were alone in the exam, that they were not on their own, that there was somebody and something with them. Mm-hmm. There are countless families where Bosco made a profound impact at difficult times in their lives, and she will be sadly missed.
Absolutely. And I know the secondary school in Tala will never be the same without Sister Bosco. She's a huge loss for them. And I just want to recognise, you know, the fabulous staff there and how kind they were and how encouraging they were of her coming in. Mm-hmm. She's retired 12 years or maybe 15 years from the school. But she came in every single day and was so warmly welcomed. Yeah.
Nancy herself and Father Brendan Lawler were like partners in crime when they would come in. Yeah. And certainly, you know, between the two of them, they were that abiding, recognisable presence of the church. And they were a popular and a welcome sight among young people, and still continue to be a welcome sight among young people in a time maybe when people have grown cynical about that kind of ministry of presence.
Mm-hmm. And still had the ability, you know, to have an impact on young people, recognised, stepped up students. She, Sister Bosco, another thing about her was she loved to place you and figure out who you were. And she loved to make that recognition and tell you about where you came from and who your people were, and just see the gifts in you. And she was very good to any child with any type of illness or disability or anything like that. She really watched out for them and encouraged them, and loved to see kids grow. Yeah,
and that was it—the gentleness of her heart and the graciousness with which we remember her this evening. And I suppose it's important as we conclude our little time of reflection and remembrance and tribute to extend our deepest sympathy, first and foremost, to her family, to her brother Bernie and her sister-in-law Eta, and her niece and her grandnieces, and also to Father Brendan Lawler here, her great friend, to her sisters in the Convent of Mercy in Tulla, to Sister Eileen, to Sister Annette, and to Sister Ita, and all her wider circle of sisters in the Mercy family, to wish and pray sympathy and peace for them in their loss and in their sadness. And thank you, Joanne, for sharing thoughts and memories with us this evening as we remember Bosco.
It was my pleasure to have known her and to speak about her with you now, Brendan.
You're tuned to Beyond Belief here on Clare FM. And time now in our programme for a little reflection on this Sunday evening. Father Liam Lawton joins us with a little prayer at night time.
Prayer for nightfall. Lord, the day is gathering to a close, and the night will soon be upon us. Let the layers of life bless this day by people, presence, and place. Find rest neath the shadow of your care. Renew, restore, repair all promises broken or unfulfilled. Calm all angst and anger so that we carry no hurt or hate into a restful sleep. May each heart beat in rhythm with every monastic prayer sung throughout this night, in chorus with the whole universe, in harmony with each star and each galaxy, in union with every voice of every angel in all of creation. May we dream dreams of a healed world, where no heart is gripped by fear or terror, nor love destroyed by human error. May the ease of sleep come to all who struggle, all who weep in lonely fields, all who toil with pitiful yield, all who yearn for their hearts to heal. Surround us, Lord. Surround us that we may surrender to sleep under your watchful keep. May we wake to your unfolding day, new moments of grace, where we might glimpse, O Lord, your face.
watch the sunrise, lighting the sky, casting its shadows near. And on this morning, bright though it be, I feel those shadows near me.
As you are always close to me, following all my ways.
I watch the sunrise, and that brings us close enough to our time to say goodbye on this Sunday evening. Thank you for your company with us. Our thanks to all our guests this evening and contributors, and to Stephen Fletcher for producing our programme here this evening. We'll be with you again next Sunday morning at 9 o'clock for the celebration of Mass here on Clare FM, and later on, of course, at 9 o'clock on Sunday night for Beyond Belief. This will be our last programme in the current season. We will be with you again in September, but during the month of August, we, if you like, take a little holiday. But do join us next Sunday, where we will be recapping on some items that we broadcast you throughout the past season. I do hope that you have a very peaceful week ahead, and we pray God's blessing upon you as we leave you this evening. May God's blessing, protection and care be with you. Good night. Slán agus beagtha.